if you're somebody who's hedging or wants to hedge or lock in profits, there's fewer cleaner opportunities than this one here right now. It is either Con Knipple or it is Cooper Flagg. There is no universe in which Vijay Edgecombe, who's still on the board at like 100 to 1 or 1,000 to 1, is going to win this award. It's the cleanest opportunity for you I think you're ever going to be presented at Sportsbook.
This is Pod to the Futures with Mitch Moss and Jonathan Von Tobel on VSiN, the sports betting network.
What's up, folks? Welcome in. We have another awesome episode in store for you here this week on Pod to the Futures, JVT, Mitch Moss, as we will look ahead to some NCAA tournament teams that I want to discuss with Mitch. The bubble is a fascinating conversation. Bruce Pearl continues to make his thoughts known on what's going to happen in the NCAA tournament, as well as some futures in both college basketball, baseball, and the National Basketball Association. That is where we'll begin. But first, not too long, Mitch, but how are you?
Pretty good, JBT. Thanks for asking. How about you?
I would be better if I could find the thing that would keep my screen behind me. There we go. I've got it. I want to keep it intact here. No more black screens for me here, buddy. I'm great. NBA season, of course. Do we call this? I think we call this a home stretch. We're in the last month of the NBA regular season. Obviously, the last week of college basketball, which we'll get to here momentarily. I want to talk some futures. Again, the bubble teams, yes, no. There's some interesting prices and some flips in those markets as well. One team that we mentioned 2 weeks ago was a $4 favorite to make the NCAA tournament is now nearly a $3 favorite to miss. We'll tell you who that is coming up. Ooh, look at that. I got Mitch, huh? You don't know who that is?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Save it for later.
Oh,
save
no,
for...
I think I know now.
Okay, all right, yeah. Either way, we'll save it for later. So if you want to hear it, just stick around. Or I'm sure there's some sort of AI projected, you know, conversation thing you can just skip forward to and find it. Either way, let's start in the NBA, because I think one of the most interesting races in the association from an award standpoint has finally flipped. And we are seeing, and we brought this up weeks ago, and this has been a topic of conversation for us. There is no 65-game minimum for Rookie of the Year or Sixth Man of the Year. We'll talk about Sixth Man coming up here in a little bit. But if you're just stacking data points while your opponent in the race is idle, I would assume that voters are going to look at that as a point of emphasis for you as a player. And we are, of course, referring to Con Knipple, who is minus 175 now to win Rookie of the Year. Cooper Flagg is at plus 140. 2 weeks ago, I played clips from Brian Windhorst, Tim Bontemps, and Tim McMahon, all believed that Cooper Flagg would be their vote, but Bontemps thought that the race could be closer because of people who would vote for Con Knipple. We have yet to see Cooper Flagg play. And Mitch, tonight here on Tuesday, it's 8:07 in the morning, he is doubtful to play tonight. What do we make of this race now? You have 4-1 on Con Knipple?
Yeah, go back to last week's episode, plus 450 in pocket on him. And when we recorded it, he was still available at around plus 360. And we thought, eh, still probably worth a shot at that point. Now, I will say that Flagg has been upgraded to doubtful. So even if he doesn't play in this game tonight, that tells me that he's going to come back sooner rather than later. So here's the question for people who listen to the podcast. And if they tailed or if they already had Knipple in pocket from a couple of weeks back or much earlier in the season, what would be your advice right now? Because, you know, a lot of people here like to hedge. They like to lock in money, make a profit no matter what. I don't think I'm going to do that with Flagg now at plus money. I think I'm just going to let this ride because, honestly, it's I put, you know, I did an okay bet on it. Like, it's going to be fun for me to win it if he does. But I don't think I really want to come back and try to give any of that away. I'm going to write it out for the last month and a half, and hopefully Knipple gets there in the end. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we always talk about hedging. Hedging is very personal, right? It depends on what you've put on it, how much you can stand to lose, all those sort of different aspects. I know everybody always wants to talk about, like, how do I hedge this? What do I do? I mean, sometimes I'm with you, and you and I have had this discussion a lot, and I'll go back a couple of years ago. So I have become team no hedge. And I mean, look, you made the bet for a reason, right? And you've got a good number on it. Let it ride and see if you're right about it. But you have made a great point. We've talked about this before, and I'll go back to the year that the first year, the Minnesota Timberwolves made the Western Conference Finals. I had them at 30-1, 40-1 to win the Western Conference that year. And they made it to the Western Conference Finals, and I let that sucker ride. Now, they lost to the Dallas Mavericks, but still, like, that was my thing. Like, I'm just going to continue to do that because you'll hit those and eventually it'll come to you. You brought up the point, though, of you have to be consistent with what you're doing. You know, if you're going to be no hedge guy, if you're going to be hedge guy, whatever it is, stick to your guns. And eventually in the long term, it'll play out. And it depends on what you want to do here. But if you're somebody who's hedging or wants to hedge or lock in profits, there's fewer cleaner opportunities than this one here right now. It is either Con Knipple or it is Cooper Flagg. There is no universe in which VJ Edgecombe, who's still on the board at like 100-1 or 1,000-1, is going to win this award. It's the cleanest opportunity for you, I think, you're ever going to be presented at sports betting.
No, it's actually, for people who like to hedge, this is kind of like the dream, right? When you take a guy early in the season at a big number, and you hope that it comes down to that person and maybe one other player, and that other player turns into plus money like Flag is right now, and that way you can sit there and just kick back and relax and lock in a profit. But you're right. I mean, it has to be one or the other, correct? I mean, I bet golf every single week. And for years, if I had a golfer in the outright market that would make the playoff, it's an automatic hedge. Like, that's 4 days. I've enjoyed watching it. I got to come out on top and make some money here. I have flipped that in recent years. And I'll give you an example of this season. I had Goddard up at one of the tournaments earlier this year. He's won two. It was the second one that he won. And I never hedged when he made it to a playoff. I had Shane Lowry this past weekend. And, you know, we don't have to get into what happened there, but he is going to win it. He's three strokes. He's 96% to win it at that point. And he starts to fall apart. And I told myself, look, Mitch, if he somehow gets it together and he makes the playoff against Echevarria, can't hedge. And I wasn't going to hedge. And so, like, for golf this entire year, that's the plan. You know, hopefully I'm in that spot to where I either have a golfer who's going to win it or in the position to actually make a playoff. Unless I have an absolute fortune that's going to be on the line, I don't plan to hedge that whatsoever. Now, with this Knipple, it's honestly, it's not enough money for me to hedge either.
Yeah.
Now, I have a much bigger bet on the San Antonio Spurs to win the West at 18-1. If they make the Western Conference Finals and the price is right at that point, I will absolutely consider a hedge, because now we're talking about way more money on the Spurs to win that bet.
Yeah. Impactful money. Yeah. Because that's the difference in hedging in these opportunities. For example, we're lucky enough to participate pretty regularly in these Circle Blackjack things.
Yeah.
Those I'm not letting ride. You know, like the Bears thing, I did not let ride against the Los Angeles Rams. But the bets that I'll put in and have, you know, all these other things, the awards, Keontae George, who we'll talk about here coming up in a second. There's a development of the most improved player of the year race. Rudy Gobert to win defense player of the year. I'm not going to get sidetracked. Somebody said something in media the other day that made me pull my hair out. We'll talk about that coming up here in a minute. But overall, the bets that I will make, I am not going to hedge. But the bigger opportunities, I think, will definitely be there. Carson Schwessinger was a good example. We batted around potentially hedging off of it, but ultimately it was just like, no, like we got a good price, is 18-1, most all of us, like, let's go see if we can get this thing done. And sure enough, he got it done. So
So, you know, when it comes down to these two players again, now Flag leads in the mainstream, he's got him by about a point per game. You would expect him to average more rebounds and assists. I mean, he operates more as the point guard there, and he's a bigger guy, so he leads there as well. He edges out Knipple in steals and blocks per game. When you go down a little bit deeper, field goal percentage, it goes to Knipple. 3-point percentage, we all know. I mean, he's shooting 44%, and he's running away. He's blasting the all-time rookie record. And he's by the way, lapping the field in most threes made this year. He's 16 up on Tyrese Maxey as we speak. He's got Flag big and free throw percentage, effective field goal percentage. Box plus minus, he's tripling him. And in VORP, he's almost doubling him as well, value over replacement. So I'm just going to let this one go, and I think Knipple is going to be the guy at the end of the year.
Yep, and I don't think this matters, but it's worth pointing out, they have played each other already once. Cooper Flagg in the game did have 49 points, but ultimately they lost, and Con Knipple drilled 8 3-pointers in that game and scored 34 himself. So, like, I don't know if head-to-head matters to some voters, but, you know, I feel like you're stacking up more games. Like, you're going to have more data points.
That's the thing, right? He's going to have way more games played as well.
Yes. Like, that's got to matter to an extent. And I will reiterate one more time, the Mavericks are going to be willing, as we get into April, to shut Cooper Flagg down. They want to improve their draft status. They are up there in terms of the ability to get a higher probability at a top four pick, the first overall pick. Can you imagine if they somehow luck into the first overall pick again? And so now they get to put Darren Peterson and Cooper Flagg together or whatever it is. I mean, they have to do it. So I think that all of that is yet to come down, obviously. But I think all of that is going to lead to Con Knipple here. But I'll say this. What's going to be interesting is tonight, not only the result, but we saw with MVP, the second that Shea got announced that he was back from injury, that market shot right back up. It was like minus 225, whatever it is. I'm curious to see once Flag, because you mentioned it's a good point, he was upgraded from to doubtful. So there's a chance he plays today. Maybe he plays in the next game for Dallas. The second he's announced as returning, I wonder what the market's going to do and how that's going to flip. Because if you don't have anything now, there's a pretty good shot you actually might get some small price on Con Knipple again before all is said and done.
I don't disagree with that. And in fact, for those people who do want to hedge if they have Knipple, I think probably now is the time. Or you hope that Flag doesn't play tonight. Knipple has a monster game, and then you come back on Flag tomorrow because the number will go up on him.
Or you hope he plays, and then Khan drops 50 on his dome, and then all of a sudden, no, I'm just playing.
There you go. I will say this, by the way, as somebody holding the Knipple ticket, I don't think, again, we brought this up during the NFL, I don't think team success should really factor into rookie of the year. I'd say the same thing about the NBA.
About the NBA, or what do you mean the MVP? Or what are you saying?
No. What about rookie of the year?
Oh, okay.
I don't think, although it's you're playing five guys, you know, on the court at one time compared to 11 on one side with, you know, and then 11 on the other side with offense and defense in the NFL. Maybe the team standings overall and like playoff implications, maybe a division winner, maybe that should factor in a little bit more. But I don't think that should be like the tiebreaker at the end of the day.
Yeah, I have a trouble with that because I feel like if I had a vote, one of the things that I would use as part of it would be like, oh, hey, and by the way, this guy is like the best player on what could be a playoff team, and you're bringing a dead corpse back to life. I mean, that's also part of it too, right? I mean, Hornets have done absolutely nothing. And then all of a sudden get Con Knipple as part of this group. And it's just like, oh, they're like, they're the best team ever. I mean, they're 18-2 with this starting lineup.
I know.
And Knipple's part of that. Like, he's the most important factor.
You know what? So hold on. I'll go back for a second here then. Where are the Hornets at if they drafted another player other than Con Knipple?
Right.
They are certainly not close to the team that they are today. So there is that as well. And the Charlotte Hornets were one of, if not like the most irrelevant franchises in all of the four major North American sports, like you said, for a good decade. Who cared about the Charlotte Hornets ever? Yep. Nobody. Yep. I mean, they're right there with some of the worst hockey teams. Like, out of sight, out of mind, nobody cared for a decade. And now look at this. They're super exciting to watch. And dare I say, if they get in as like the 8 seed, that's a threat. That team can play Detroit, you know, and give them a series.
Yep. Or, I mean, God forbid if it's like, I mean, I don't think this will happen because they'd have to make quite the leap up. But, I mean, if somehow the Knicks have to run into them or something, that first round series, the Knicks don't want to see them.
I don't think so. No.
Yeah. Not at all the way they played defensively. The last point on this, too, to the point of this team success, I guess you could put this, because this should matter as well. With Con Knipple on the floor, the Hornets net rating improves by 5.5 points every 100 possessions. With Cooper Flagg on the floor, it's a minus 0.5. Now, there's some noise in that. Cooper Flagg is playing with, you know, you and me at times. So there's not a lot there. But his impact on winning for a team that could be a playoff team statistically is way better than what Cooper Flagg has done for a team that's competing for a top overall pick in the draft. That to me, to your point about team success, that maybe is how you contextualize team success without saying, hey, man, they're the 8 seed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay. That makes a lot of sense, using a metric like that, yeah.
Yeah, because it's got to factor in some way, shape, or form, but we'll see if that's the case. So the other awards here. Sixth Man of the Year, we have not talked about a lot, and it's an award that I think is, for me, not like Most Improved, because Most Improved is almost impossible to read at this point right now. But there is a lot going on here when you talk about the Sixth Man of the Year race. Naz Reid is your favorite at plus 115. Keldon Johnson at plus 350. Jaime Jaquez Jr. at 6-1. And then the last single-digit shot on the board at DraftKings, Reed Shepard of the Houston Rockets. Now, I bring that up in that voice because Mitch Moss does have some Reed Shepard tickets at Sixth Man of the Year to win this thing.
Yeah, that was one of the first podcasts that we did, I think, back in late September, early October, as the NBA season was approaching. I bet him Most Improved at 100-1 and Sixth Man at 60-1. And he was, I think, before the other day, he was as high as 25-1 at DraftKings. But Reed Shepard has been on an absolute tear. And he accomplished something last night in the win. Now, they had to squeak out that win. Well, not really squeak out, but they never had a chance, really, of covering that game against Washington. Mm-hmm. And he did, I'm going to get the stat here for you in a second. But he did something that only a couple of sophomores have ever done, as Stat News put it. 15 points, 5 rebounds, 10 assists. He had 6 steals, 2 blocks, I think. Only other sophomores ever, Larry Bird, Elvin Robertson, and Alexander Volkov. Reed Shepard, the only other guy to ever do that. And when you look at his advanced numbers, So the per numbers, the Hollinger stat, Keldon Johnson actually has a per of 17.91. That's the highest out of these four. That's higher than Naz Reid and Shepard. Shepard is a little bit behind Naz Reid in that. He has more win shares than Naz Reid, and he's a little bit behind Keldon Johnson. He has a higher estimated plus minus at dunks and threes. Not close. Blows away Keldon Johnson and Jaime Jaquez. And he is just behind Naz Reid. And Reed Shepard has a higher VORP than Naz Reid as well. Do you think, at 9-1, probably not worth a bet, but for those people who were on Shepard at the beginning of the year, do we have a pulse with that ticket?
I think you do. I think the question becomes, again, we talk about all of these weird walls that voters build up for players that are early on in their career. I don't see why somebody like Reed would not be able to win Sixth Man of the Year, or why a voter would make up some arbitrary rule as to why they could not vote for him. But that would be my only worry. I think he's got a resume on par with a lot of these guys. And I think what you're getting at, too, I would argue, I don't know, Naz Reid at plus 115, I don't know if he's a favorite to win this thing. I mean, first off, he's won it before, and yeah. I think voters do that thing where it's like, well, were you better than you were last time? And he's not. He's actually not really having a good year in terms of his impact on the team. Their improvement on the floor when he's out there only improves by about 1.5 points. Their offense actually gets statistically worse. Their defense is what improves the most with Naz Reid out there, so maybe that matters. I mean, I think you look around, it was either Reed Shepard, or if you just look at the basic six-man of the year statistics, Jaime Jaquez is the one that leads them in scoring in terms of all of these candidates we're talking about. I'm surprised the market isn't higher on Jaquez at 6-1.
Yeah, I could see that. He's been a big part of the Heat's success they've had the entire year. Putting up good numbers
with a question success, playing team. I don't know. You know,
I know. But I wonder how much the advanced numbers will factor in his per.
Yeah,
dead last on all four of those guys. The value added. I mean, not even close to Shepard or Reed, the estimated added as well. And he's a negative estimated plus minus as well, negative 1.3. His win shares are way behind, and the VORP, not close to those guys either. So I just, again, do they factor that in?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I don't know either. And again, we should note, some voters are simpletons. Some will just look at points per game and just be like, that's my guy.
Yeah.
Right? I just need the sixth man of the year who produces the most points and the most scoring off of the bench.
You know what? By the way, sorry to cut you off. I will say this. If you look at these other teams, Minnesota is somewhat deep still, and they got other guys off the bench that can contribute. So I'd say the same thing about the Spurs and definitely the Heat. They got a ton of guys that can. Where's the depth with the Rockets? And the biggest problem for that team entering the year was the injury to Fred VanVleet and the lack of guard play. I'd say that without Reed Shepard, and what he's done in these games, and maybe this is me talking as a guy with holding him at a big ticket here, trying to manifest this. But without him coming off the bench, they don't have much at all, in my opinion.
Oh, of course. I mean, I would agree. I think one of the arguments is I talked to Zach Cohen about this on the Harvard Handicappers podcast last week. One of the big criticisms, well, there's many of them, of Ime Udoka here is bro, played Reed Shepard more. Your offense stinks.
people going down a rabbit hole on Twitter and Rockets Twitter handles and the fan base, they're screaming it. I get it. This is them talking. Okay, maybe he's going to give up something defensively, but offensively, the spark that he gives his team, start him. You got to put him in the starting lineup more, or he's got to get 30 plus minutes every single game. People are screaming for this to happen.
Yep. It's exactly that. The way that I put it too with Zach was just he is not enough of a negative on defense that your team can't make up for it. That would excuse you not playing him the way that you are refusing to. There's just no way. The other name we should mention, which I think is pretty unique, although he won't win it. I would have to look back in the annals of history to see if this has happened before. Ayo Dosunmu is a really interesting candidate. He's not that far behind Naz Reid in terms of scoring, but he switched teams.
Yeah.
Obviously, was with Chicago. Now he's with Minnesota. Had a 21-point outing with Minnesota a couple of games ago. Last few games have been okay. 12-7, 12-9. We'll see what his role is, but he's another fascinating candidate because he's got the numbers to be on par with some of these guys. And does your resume get boosted by the fact, what if he actually down the stretch just becomes a scoring presence off the bench for Minnesota, helps him make a push up the standings? That is a pretty impressive resume to go from one team to another and just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree. What do you want to make of most improved now with Keontae George coming back? And last night he had 36 against the Nuggets, and he was absolutely outstanding. Little too late here as they benched him and he was hurt for a while.
And no, because I think you've got enough runway at the end of the season to get back into the... Because here's the thing, too. I say this all the time. I'll say it again. We're viewing this through the prism of the betting market, and that the betting market is correct, that the voters have discounted Keontae George, right? That might not be the case. When he was running hot, you had multiple media members calling him the most improved player.
Yeah, you're right.
So I don't think that missing some time is going to deter any voters if they think he's legitimately improved in his game. Now, we'll see if that's the case. You have some pretty strong candidates, Duren, Johnson, Denny Avdia. I don't really buy the Ryan Rollins stuff that much. If you're talking about the actual improvement in games, his numbers are better. But if you compare him with some of these other guys, I think there are stronger cases to be made. And if he continues on this path, I mean, dude, come on now. This is going to be a player who has made leaps and bounds. And I think Cohen put it really well. He was on the fringe of the rotation last year. Like they were thinking about moving on from him. And then all of a sudden he just bursts out to the scene.
Did they really? They were pondering that?
I mean, I shouldn't say that. That's speculation on my part. I think that they were he was on the fringe of the rotation and they were just kind of out on the way that he was playing last year.
Yeah, I think there's a chance if they play him the rest of the year, which they won't, they'll sit him in certain games. But if he plays, let's say, a majority of the games, I think there's a pretty good chance it comes down to him and Duren. Duren's going to be tough to beat at this point.
Yeah, especially with his, again, we go back to team contributions. You know, how much do you factor in contributing to a team that's going to be the one seed in the Eastern Conference as your improvement is going to be pretty interesting. And we'll see what Avdija does as well. All right, let's take a break here. On the other side, I'll mention really quickly what bothered me. There was a media member that said something about an award. I'll mention that in passing really quickly. And then I'll give you the answer to my tease, which is the team that was over $4 to make the NCAA tournament, now in your $3 favorite to miss it. Get your guesses ready. All right, I'll pay off the tease here in a second, but I do have to just say something really quickly about Defensive Player of the Year. So we talked about this a lot. I'm not going to go into a handicap. I'm not going to do anything. Victor Wembanyama is minus 600. Chet Holmgren plus 475. Rudy Gobert's 25-1 now. I was listening to Tim McMahon and Ryan Windhorst and them again. And Mitch, they bring up Defensive Player of the Year. I think this is on the last episode. And they have the audacity to go, you know, Rudy Gobert, these numbers, they're pretty good. He really could be a legitimate contender for Defensive Player of the Year if not for the presence of Holmgren and Wemby. And it's like, and then they even go, well, even his on-court numbers are better. And I'm just like, you control the narrative. You're the ones that are voting for this. Stop acting like this is out of your hands when it comes to Defensive Player of the Year. Nah. It drives me nuts.
Do they all have votes?
So we don't know yet. So the NBA sends them out, I think, or I don't know when they send them out, but media members find out near the end of the year if they have a vote or if they do not.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, because Windhorst made a comment one time where he was like, you know, I don't know if I have a vote. I'll find out later or something like that. So,
wow.
I mean, I would assume the likelihood is that two of the three probably do.
I would just think that the NBA might want to establish that before the season starts.
Yeah, right. I mean, if you don't know you're a voter, if you're taking it seriously to evaluate these players, these awards, all these sort of things, it is an interesting wrinkle in the handicap. If it's like, do you imagine just popping up in your inbox one day, like, by the way, you're a voter. Here's NBA All First Team, Second Team, Defensive Rookie of the Year. You know what I mean? Yep. You're like, whoa, what the hell am I supposed to do with all this?
Mm-hmm. I haven't paid attention for 1 second, but here you go. Right, all of a sudden.
Hey, I mean, very famously, Michael Wilbon, who was a voter the year that he let this slip on PTI one year, said, it was like on a pregame. It was the year the Kings had, you remember the Beam team that made, like, what was it, the 3 seed or whatever it was?
Yeah.
He famously said on an ESPN broadcast in February that this was the first time he'd been watching the Kings. So
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Thank God that guy had a vote ever in his life.
Yes. Thank goodness. Thank goodness. These are the best of the best right now. Anyway. All right. Let's get to college basketball. There's some interesting yes, no tournament bubble, if I could speak, props that are available. And the team. So would you like to? I threw it out there. I think you know now. Maybe if you looked at the odds, you've officially know now. But who is the team I'm referring to? I will reiterate. They were over a $4 favorite to make the NCAA tournament. And now they are a $3 favorite, or nearly, to miss.
It's got
to
be Auburn.
It is. The Auburn Tigers. Yes, plus 210. No, minus 280. Daddy Pearl is doing the media rounds, trying to get his boy in there. As somebody pointed out, I think it was the Barstool show that is up on the TVs in the morning when I go pump iron. He was on there. And he even referred to Auburn as we.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. He was talking about him. So totally straight and narrow down the line media member here. What do we make of Auburn?
Can't have that. Can't have that on TV.
No, it's absolute. It's ridiculous. But what do we make of Auburn here? Because I just had you're as cynical as they come when it comes to this stuff. I remember watching you the first college football playoff, the first four teamer, watching you doubled over when TCU didn't make it into the college football playoff that year because they didn't play in a conference championship game. They, being the elite, do this all the time, and I could totally foresee a scenario in which Auburn makes it as like the last team in the NCAA tournament.
Well, so this is where you have to use your brain, right? Not your heart. Because basically, if you're like most people, March Madness is all about Cinderella and the underdog. And that's why we fell in love with the tournament for so many years. We don't care about a team way below 500 in their own conference. Mm-hmm. One game above 500 on the year, getting in. We don't want that. Most of us, the elitists across the country will, but screw them. And when I look at this team, again, 15-14 on the year, 6-10 in SEC play, they beat Kentucky by one at the buzzer for their only win in February. They're 1-7, last eight games. Shouldn't recent form mean something as well? Now, here's the thing. If you go back the entire year, they do have wins over St. John's on a neutral. They beat NC State at home, Arkansas by 22 at home, and they did win at Florida by 9. So they have all that going for them. However, again, and they, you know, the good losses, right? Lost to Houston by 1, Michigan by 30, Arizona by 29, Purdue by 28. And then you tie in their recent losses.
Yeah.
They got beat over the weekend at home to Ole Miss. Ole Miss is 12-17, and they have 4 wins in the SEC. They lost by 12 at Oklahoma Sooners, 15-14 on the year, 5-11 in SEC play. They lost at Mississippi State, 13-16 overall, 5-11 in league play. But I will point out, again, now at plus money, this big narrative about how Miami should not be in by a lot of people, and they do have a terrible SOS. And with Bruce Pearl's former or slash current club, I should say, they are rated 40th at KenPom and top 45 at Torbic.
Yep.
And not until Monday morning did Joel Lenardi actually have them out of the tournament, and they were the first out of the last four teams out.
Yeah.
So he had them in all the way through Sunday night, which is just
insane.
How? I don't know. But maybe at plus money, that's actually worth it. Because are they going to try to stuff them in? They stuffed Oklahoma and Texas in the tournament last year.
Yep. And I would agree. I mean, obviously, all points that you make are factual. I am not a professional in this field at all. So if anybody has an answer to this question, I would love to hear it, because the net rankings also don't really make that much sense to me. They're clearly in the, they're a top 38. They're 38th in the country in net rankings. They're 5-11 in quad one wins. They have a quad three loss, Auburn does. And yet at 15-14 with 11 quad one losses and a loss in quad three, they are 38th in the country in terms of net ranking. Everything that you brought up, on top of everything else, I'm with you. Like, I'm kind of tempted here to get them in. And it's funny because we had Jerry Palm again on. He's been joining us regularly on Money Moves. And I asked him about Auburn, and I was like, hey, look, like, is this team cooked? I mean, the market thinks that there's a pretty good chance that they're going to miss. The quad one record continues to get worse. And he immediately is like, and this is a slight on him because he does this all the time. He's just reading the committee. And he goes, oh, no. Like, you know, they can stack up a couple of wins in the SEC tournament and make it in.
Oh, like, that's the thing. That's the thing.
Like, what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand how you can do this and just keep saying, well, we played a tough schedule. Like, you got to beat them. But every number that you listed off that we're talking about here with the net rankings, I am tempted to, yeah. Like, I should have. I was pissed because I saw $4 to make it, and I was like, man, that's way too much given the resume. You should probably play that. No, you could be sitting on 2-1 on both sides right now.
Yep. And by I'm looking at last year, Texas was 6-12 in SEC play. They were put into the first four.
Yep.
They lost 86-80 to Xavier. Oklahoma was 6-12. They put them in against UConn in the 8-9 game. Oklahoma lost 67-59.
Yeah.
Those teams were a combined 12-24 in the SEC. But no, we got to get 13, 14 teams in from that conference. So
yep.
I won't be stunned. I'll be sad, and I'll probably, that probably is not the right emotion. I'll be pissed like I was when TCU was left out. Might throw something at the house if they get in, but that is currently. I probably can't even argue with it JBT if they win out in the regular season and then do take a couple in the SEC tournament.
Yep. I think so. Is there any other teams? Because there's a couple of teams to me that are on the list here for the make-miss that I'd be interested in from a prop standpoint. Was there a team on the bubble that you were interested in before I get to the other ones that I had on my list?
No, go ahead. This is all you. The bubble thing is just... it's too much of a head scratcher for me.
Yeah. So there's two teams we brought up at Palm that I was really interested in. Santa Clara is one that I think is really interesting.
Pauly yes, Petum, no.
Better no? Okay, minus Petum, 130 no. On the yes. When did he get it? Because no is even money.
I think it was minus 115.
Okay, so he laid a price on the no. Okay.
But his whole point is like they have to beat St. Mary's in the West Coast Conference tournament.
Yes, which they're on their side of the bracket. They would face them in the semifinals.
Yep, because the Big West... West Coast, I'm sorry, has only gotten three teams in once, I think, in the last 10, 15 years.
Okay. It's interesting because they're not, I mean, where are they at? Hold on, I just had them up here. They are, I hate the control. They're a top 40 team just on the fringes in terms of net ranking. They're 41st in the country. Now, they're 1-5 in quad one games, so that's going to be a problem for them as well. But 6-1 in quad two, 8-0 against quad three. They do have a quad four loss, which maybe that's probably going to hold them back. And like you said, I mean, to that point, I mean, for Pauly and playing this, even if I want to get involved, maybe the strategy is just wait until they play St. Mary's and just bet them on the money line. Right. Because, I mean, that would essentially be, if we're right, the yes, no right there. Like if you beat St. Mary's, you're in. If you lose, then you're out.
I would absolutely agree with that.
Okay. The other team who just scored a big win over the weekend is Ohio State. They are now minus 240 to make the NCAA tournament. KenPom's got them as a top 35 team. They're 35th in the country. They just beat Purdue, which I guess is a pelt on the wall. I know I'm being a little facetious here, but much like Auburn, Ohio State, despite everything we've seen, and they're a little bit better, right? They're 18-11.
Yep.
But they're 2-10 in quad one games. I mean, I don't know how.
Good losses, JBT. They have so many good losses.
That's what I don't get is this is also a team I want to play on the no because, I mean, you can't. There's some of these teams like Palm brought up San Diego State and that like Troy lost at the beginning of the year is like an albatross hanging on their neck. That's like one of the things that's kind of keeping them in the bubble as well as some of these losses that they're suffering. They just lost to Colorado State last weekend. But how can you be 2-10 in the quad one? And the market realistically looking at you and go, minus 240 to make the NCAA tournament. Yep, you're in. You're good.
So if they don't win a game in the Big Ten tournament,
right.
Are they still? I mean, because right now the bracket matrix, they have them as an 11 seed. That tells me minus 240 is a little bit too heavy on them.
Right. And let's say this. Let's say, to your point, I'm going to assume they beat Penn State. I mean, they're on the road, and Penn State's 130th in KenPom, so maybe that's not really whatever. But let's chalk it up as a victory, however close it might be, whatever it is. They could lose to Indiana at home to end the season. And then to your point, what if they lose the Big Ten tournament in the first game?
Right.
What is that resume? I mean, and if they lose to Indiana, I'm not entirely sure. I don't know if that would be a quad one loss, but still, I mean, that's another loss on the ledger, either quad one or quad two. It's brutal.
Yep. I don't hate it. I don't.
All right. Other prices, too, really quickly. Just some interesting teams. VCU, yes, plus 280. No, minus 400. That was the other one on my list. And then San Diego State continues to fascinate me. So does New Mexico, although DraftKings won't hang a price on New Mexico. But the Mountain West team is pretty incredible. San Diego State to make the tournament 2-1, no minus 290. And New Mexico is a team that if you actually look at some of their net rankings and their numbers, pretty solidly up there, 42nd in the country. Not met any quad one wins, just 2-5. But the good thing for New Mexico, undefeated against quad four opponents and just one quad three loss. So we'll see. But the Mountain West continues to be really fascinating, too.
What if Utah State wins the Mountain West? How many bids?
Right now, I think it would depend on who runs to the final, but I would say just one.
Just one?
I think so. I mean.
Oh, man.
I mean, San Diego State, they're what's the word I'm looking for? Their history, I guess, right? Their reputation, there we go, might get them in, but I just don't think that's the case. And for New Mexico, I mean, maybe if they make a run to the Mountain West final and they lose to Utah State, maybe they're going to stack up enough there that the committee would look at them and say that's good enough. But, I mean, right now, the problem is all these teams keep losing to each other. It's actually been a really entertaining season. Like this league, you know me, I watched a lot of Mountain West basketball. Like this league's been great, but they've been cannibalizing each other and they're ruining their chances to make the NCAA tournament.
Yep. I will say this, I brought this up on Monday's edition of Follow the Money. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
this year is playing out a lot like last year. And I think if Florida gets that final number one seed overall, we're going to get four number one seeds in the Final Four again.
Yeah. I don't trust the
separation. The teams at the top are just absolute monsters.
Yeah. There's some projected fields or excuse me, some props out there. You know, the top four, Duke, Arizona. Who am I missing?
Michigan,
excuse me. Yes, thank you. And Florida, like minus 200 thereabouts versus the field to win the NCAA tournament.
Caesars has this up, and it's will a one seed win it this year? It's minus 180.
Yeah.
I need to wait on that because if Florida is,
yeah.
I want to know Florida's the one because Florida clearly can win it as a two.
Yep.
So my approach is going to be, we'll wait on that. I'm probably going to be willing to lay a big number if Florida's the one, but also that my favorite prop already, I can tell you, it's based on the number, but thinking it's going to be correct, I'm going to bet the total number combined for seeds to make the Final Four. Usually that's like nine and a half or maybe a little bit higher than that. I think it's going to be like four or five.
Yep.
Three ones, and then Florida, if they're not a one, they're a two, then they're, there you go.
And I would assume, not to speak for you, but I would assume the one seed that would make you balk a little bit would be UConn.
It is, yeah.
Yes. I mean, what do you mean? They beat Villanova and St. John's and then went back home and barely got by Seton Hall. So,
with that guy, you never want to like
doubt.
Disrespect him or doubt for sure. But if they're the one seed in a region where Florida is the two, I mean, Florida is clearly favored in that game on a neutral, and that might be a 4 or 5 point number.
Yep. I would agree. All right, let's take a break, come back. We have some listener questions we're going to get to coming up in about 10 minutes or so. Also, a little bit of baseball as well, so don't move a muscle. All right, baseball season's around the corner. World Baseball Classic is on the way as well. Thank God they gave a roster spot to Tarek Skubal so he could throw 35 pitches against Great Britain and then leave, huh?
It's fun. And then he comes out weeks ago or last week or whatever. I'm pitching once. That's it.
I don't understand it.
Yeah, call me good. USA is absolutely stacked, obviously. So is Japan. So is the Dominican Republic. That's the team that I have a bet on at plus 460 to win.
Which one?
The Dominican Republic.
Okay. All right.
Now, the pitching, a couple of things did not go my way. Freddy Peralta, I was hoping would be on the team. He's not. He wants to concentrate for the Mets on opening day, and that's good for that team, obviously. And there's no Framber Valdez. But yeah. Christopher Sanchez will be the key guy there. It's the lineup, JBT. This is what we're talking about for the DR. Juan Soto, Vlad Jr., Jose Ramirez, Julio Rodriguez, Ketel Marte, Junior Caminero, Fernando Tatis, Ellie De La Cruz. And that's the one through nine is just, it's Sick. Completely loaded. So now when you have Skubal only making one start on the U.S. side, they're going to have to go through Japan. And Japan, obviously, they're going to be completely loaded as well. But with that lineup and some decent starting pitching, I say that because Sanchez, there's not a lot of depth overall. At plus 460, I had to take that bet.
Yeah. Actually, I'm going to have to ride with you on that one. I was sifting through some world baseball stuff today. That might be the play there. Actually go through it. All right, I'm going to add on that one. On top of, by the way, my stupid money line parlay against the tanking teams that I put together earlier today.
Did you do all six teams?
I did five. I did not trust Phoenix to get it done. Against Sacramento. So
with Booker back, come on, man.
That's a good point. Maybe I should add another one. But a five-team moneyline parlay paying minus 105.
Well, think about this. You only have to have all six teams win on this moneyline parlay for it to pay plus 150.
Ooh, okay. I might have to add that, yeah.
But a six-leg parlay in the NBA, it frightens me to death.
I mean, the one I suggested yesterday, not to get too off topic, was the I told Stormy. Stormy was the one that was brave enough to actually play it. I just put together Duke and then the two, what was it, Denver and Houston?
Houston, yeah.
Yeah. But she put together Duke, Arizona, Denver, and Houston. And so she put all four of those together. But, man, by the way, I'm getting distracted. I will just say this because we were talking about college basketball really quickly. I don't think we understand how much of a machine Duke is. By the way, just want to say that really quickly.
No, I totally agree. But I can also come back at you and say the same thing about Michigan, Arizona, and Florida.
It's a good point. Although, I don't know, man. Like, the only blemish on Duke's resume in the last 2 months is a game in which they shot like crap and they lost by three on the road. Like, man, that team's so freaking good. And I keep calling them spot proof. I mean, you would think every single letdown spot. Oh, you know, you got, who was it? Syracuse before Michigan. Better watch out. Smoke them. Oh, well, you know, you got to go to Notre Dame after you beat Michigan. Smoke them. Like, oh, well, you're looking ahead to Virginia. Maybe. Nope, doesn't matter. Oh, well, you know, you got North Carolina on deck. Nope, sorry. NC State get crushed. Like, they are. They're dominant.
Put it this way. If the number is right this weekend against North Carolina, I am going to have a big bet on Duke.
Yeah, dude.
I want nothing to do with fading the top four teams. I don't care how big the numbers are. I had zero interest last night. NC State, I said it on the air multiple times, can't do it. Same thing with Iowa State. Good team. Don't care. Arizona, I watched the game against Kansas over the weekend. That's a close game, 15 minutes-ish left in the second half. Destruction the rest of the way. Yep. And Kansas had a full complement of players.
Yep. And Coach Pete, I mean, like the fact that he's back, he just makes them so much better. They're, man, they're good. All right. Anyway, I apologize. Baseball. So outside of World Baseball Classic, season's around the corner. I have a couple of props that I've added for baseball as well, but you had something on most strikeouts. And I'm really interested in some of these.
Okay. I will say next week, I'm going to unveil my Cy Young, my first bet that I made, which goes back to like December or January. I've been waiting. Circa's going to post awards this Thursday, I believe.
Okay.
So I just want to see what that number is. And if it's high enough, I'm going to add more. And I will have it next Tuesday on the podcast. I'm very excited about this pitcher. But here are my three bets that I have on most strikeouts this year. First of all, tip of the cap to our buddy Weston, guy in the cornfields. I tailed him on Brian Wu for the Mariners. From July 1st on last year, he threw 53 and two-thirds innings. Remember, he had that streak of going six-plus.
Yep.
So he's good to go. He's like, he was a six-inning-plus machine last year. And from July 1st on, 11.91 Ks per nine. That was the most in Major League Baseball. I bet him at 50, and I bet Lizardo with the Phillies and Mackenzie Gore. The reason why I bet Lizardo, 62 and two-thirds from July 1st on last year, 10.91 Ks per nine. That was the fourth most. My biggest question is, can he avoid or eliminate the big blow-up games? Here's the list of games that did not go well for him last year. 3 1/3 against Milwaukee, 12 hits, 12 earned. Against Toronto, 2 1/3, 9 hits, 8 earned. Against Cincinnati, 5 earned runs over 2 innings, and he had 5 other games with 4 earned runs allowed. Can he cut those down and go deeper into games consistently? I think I'll have a chance with him. And then Mackenzie Gore goes to the American League West. And I remember being on the air last year with Follow the Money, Paulie, his first start of the year, I think it was late March against the Phillies. He struck out 13, and we were looking, and I brought up live on the air. I told Paulie, any desire to bet him 80-1 to lead the league in strikeouts at the time a year ago, and it was just, I don't want to overreact to the 13 Ks. I didn't, but I filed that one away, and now he goes from a bad Washington team and playing in the NL East to a Texas Rangers team that he's going to be, what, the third man in that rotation behind DeGrom and Eovaldi, and just I had that. And I made a point to like put that on the board for this year with Mackenzie Gore. So I have him and Lizardo at 60 and Brian Wu at 50-1.
So I don't know if you've ever had a bet that didn't come close to cashing, but you knew you were like, dude, I was dead right on this. Like I was dead right. Things just didn't go my way because I bring that up.
Every bet that I make.
Yeah, right. Actually, it's a good point. For me last year, it was Brian Wu. He was
Cy Young.
Was it the year before? Might have been the year before, actually. Maybe I'm mixing up the years. But he was 750-1 for one of those years to lead the league in strikeouts. Whoa. And I was like, this guy's got, like, he's got the good mode. He's got good strikeout stuff. He's going to be able to put it together. But then he got dinged up. And I think it was actually the year before because that was when he only pitched 121 in the third innings. But he got injured, got off to a slow start, then came back, was a little bit more of like a pitch-to-contact guy before he got his stuff back. I love the Wu play because I think he is so good. And it's funny, I go back, I watched his first start on like a live bet Saturday back at the South Point days, and he got absolutely shelled by the Texas Rangers, and they kept panning to his parents in the stands, and they were like crying, and he was just getting absolutely smoked. But like he's awesome, man. He is absolutely tremendous, and I do think that that's been on my radar for a while ever since I played that really long shot on him, and absolutely would agree that he's going to be freaking nails when he gets out
now,
there.
The guys at the very top are going to be very difficult to beat, obviously. It goes without saying, Garrett Crochet, Turek Skubal. And also, don't forget about Paul Skeens, because the Pirates have maybe postseason desires this year, aspirations. And if that's the case and they're in the mix, they're clearly not going to shut that guy down. And you know, they're going to be tough to beat. But those numbers are pretty strong with how many innings we're talking about, the Ks per nine overall. And if we're talking about like a perfect storm here to where these guys play the, you know, pitch 32 games, start that many, I should say, and their innings are at the very top or near the top of the list again this year, they can get there. It was a couple of years ago where it came down to the final day of the regular season. And like, there were some huge long shots. Like, I had Cole Reagans at 100-1 or higher to lead, and he missed a So, I mean, you can get these. Chris Sale a couple years ago came down, the same guy. He was 60-1 or 70-1, and it came down to like the last day, and the Braves sat him to save him for the postseason. But these big numbers can come in here for sure in this market.
All right, we're up against this. Let me take a break here because I want to have enough room on the other side. We got some listener questions, and I have two for you, futures for you in the American League that I want to get to. So the two American League futures that I've got here, Mitch, double digits to win the American League pennant, but both of these teams I think have some real upward mobility. I've come around on them a lot in the offseason preparation. There's three teams in total I like in the American League, but the Tigers are one of them. They're 9-1. We'll see what happens there, but over the win total for sure for Detroit is a play worth making. The Texas Rangers at 13-1 and the Kansas City Royals at 17-1. The Rangers are a team that I bought in on last year. They had all the indications that the offense should turn around. The pitching is fantastic. You're just waiting for them to fix that lineup, and I think this is the year that they're going to do it. That lineup looks like it's going to be really solid and get backed by some really good front-end pitching in that rotation. I think they can win the American League West, obviously, and really win the American League. I really like this Rangers team a lot.
I like both.
Yeah, and then the Royals, just want to point out, you and I are in a fantasy baseball league together. We're submitting our keepers now. One of my keepers was Vinny Pasquantino. 32 homers last year and 113 runs driven in. And Kansas City has now brought those outfield walls in, except for center, so left and right. Mm-hmm. They're trying to really accentuate some of the power they have in their lineup. And Vinny is one of those guys. So if he benefits from a better home field in terms of power, so if he can push for like that 40 home run mark, we already know what Bobby Witt Jr. is. The pitching staff is very good. I think that Kansas City is going to quietly all of a sudden, you're going to look around in like the middle of the summer, you're going to be like, oh, like this team's on pace for like, you know, high 80 wins, and they're going to be really, really formidable when you get to the postseason. I think those two teams are very much worth looking at now because I think they're going to be good and there's not going to be a dip from where they're being priced right now.
Okay. I like them.
All right. Listener questions in the last 3 minutes. Again, you can leave these on the YouTube page. You can put them up in the comments, in the reviews up on the podcast and Apple Pods. Pete says, guys, two futures I'd like you to discuss. Pittsburgh to win the NL Central at 10-1. Took it a few weeks ago. As he notes, starting rotation's good. Skeens, Keller, Chandler, Ashcraft, Urquidy. Late May, early June, Jared Jones coming back. That was one of my keepers last year. That was very disappointing. Mm-hmm. I can make the arguments for the Reds at +425 as well. But what do you make of those two? Pittsburgh to win the NL Central, Reds as well. But I think you and I would both agree the Pittsburgh Pirates are like the sexy team, and I think that they're really solid.
No, they're super solid. And yeah. I mean, Skeens is going to be insane. He's going to be very difficult to beat every single time he takes the mound. I would say that the Cubs are going to be damn good. I mean, I've heard plenty of people make the case that they're going to go over their win total when in the 90s. And I have to say that despite trading Freddie Peralta, I think the Brewers are going to be right there again this year, and I think they're going to go over their win total, and people are going to sleep on this team yet again, and we're going to be talking about Milwaukee pretty much the entire year and potentially like deep into the season.
All right, Preston, best and worst records in Major League Baseball, Nationals and Cardinals. Also says, also loves the final four long shots. Even if you guys don't say it, I'll be betting XYZ team. I just like hearing the cases for most teams. Not everyone thinks or talks about. Thank you, Preston. We appreciate that. But worst records, Nationals, Cardinals. I like the Cardinals one. Cards are going to be pretty bad, man. Like they sold
really
off,
bad.
Yeah, they sold off everything, and they're really steering into like the youth deal.
By the way, this is foreign territory to me. Because my entire life, the Cardinals have been like a contender or
annoyingly good. Yeah.
Yes, exactly right. And I can't get my brain wrapped around the Cardinals being an absolute stink bomb.
Yep.
So it just seems odd to me.
For reference, too, by the way, Nationals +750. The Cardinals are 28-1 to have the worst record. That's worth a little bit. Now, again, Rockies are -400. The Rockies are going to be pretty bad, but they invested in the pitching staff. Like road games, they might not be as bad, right, in terms of their pitching.
But it means the Cardinals are going to have to lose 100-plus games?
Yeah.
Are they going to be that bad?
I don't know. But I'll say this. I do think the market's a little mispriced because the White Sox are the second shot at 7-1 to have the worst record. I think they're actually going to be pretty solid. Right. I think the Twins are going to have a worse record than the Chicago White Sox.
Twins could be a team that could sneak in there as well for worst record overall.
30-1. 30-1 to do so. All right. Well, we appreciate it. Last 30 seconds here. Mitch, of course, thank you very much. We have this time now to tell you, please like, rate, review, and subscribe. We appreciate everything that the podcast has been growing from what we can see. And we want to keep that going as well, make the bosses and everybody else happy. So, and remember, leave the comments. If you have Apple Pods in the reviews, you give us a 5-star and a question, we'll answer that. And in the YouTube page as well. So check that out there. But for Mitch, Wyatt, we appreciate it as well. We will be back next week here on Pod to the Futures. Make sure you tune in then.